May 28, 2014, it's the Watt Pedro Show. Mike from Pedro Show. Brother Matt, how are you?
Good. Just dipping in his burrito sack.
Yep. Got another fucking Guanajuato burrito because miércoles is the cano day for the carnitas. And I got one, so I brought one for Brother Matt, too.
Gracias.
Round two. Fucking tasty. Brother Matt, let me say, we started the show off with I Talked to the Trees by John Coltrane, and then the Bob single version of She Don't Know Why I'm Here by The Last.
Ooh,
Brother Matt, help me welcome, yes, the very man of The Last, the man who wrote that song, sang that song, played on that song, Mr. Joe Nolte.
Welcome.
How you doing, folks? Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Well, Sam Pedro, how many years now?
I'm a newcomer to Pedro, barely a decade.
Okay.
I'm so sorry, but I've been South Bay all my life.
Right. Original Dondo?
Redondo, Hermosa, PV.
Wow, the Hill.
Yeah, I actually grew up on the Hill. Moved to the Hill when I was 4.
Dang.
Moved to the Hill probably as Kennedy was being elected. Within a week of that.
1960.
Yeah, yeah. Moved to Hermosa in 72.
So your first 12 years are on the Hill.
Yeah. That's
wow.
When I first
so
got
let's
damaged.
Let's go way back to them. What's your first musical recollection?
That's a great, insane, and impossible to answer question. What
was
the first
TV,
thing? I mean, it was probably
on the radio, maybe your pop playing a record.
Well, I do recall the Huckleberry Hound theme song from way back then, especially because we always had to have dinner right at 7 o'clock without fail. It was like because people did that; they sat down to dinner. Oh crap! And so I always missed the Huckleberry Hound show. And they'd let us be excused. I got down there just in time to watch the damn theme song as they signed off.
so that's your first music recollection.
Yeah, my mom listened to the top 40 stations.
AM radio.
Yeah, all two of them. there was no KHJ then.
Oh, this is
pre-KHJ. This is Kennedy era. This is like 61, 62. 63, so she listened to the other two, KFWB, and of course, KRLA. And
is both still on?
I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, not quite the same as, KFWB is really...
Still get that
theme
song.
KFWB, Channel 98. Yeah, that was Warner Brothers' old station. That's the
right.
WB. But it was... So I heard, just absorbed unconsciously a whole lot of the early 60s pop, the, pre-Beatles. And to me, that's still the great, unappreciated, almost undiscovered terrain of pop music. I think it was one of the most...
Well, like Gene Vincent?
Brilliant. No. This is post-original rock and roll. You know, there's the story. It's like, okay, there's a great, rock and roll movement of the 50s. Yeah. Then, Elvis gets drafted, Buddy Holly dies, everybody goes to hell. And there's a great vacuum until the Beatles come,
right.
Which is not entirely correct. But I mean, it's like the best time for Motown. This is the period when they let Smokey Robinson do most of the writing. And, I mean, I think without Smokey Robinson, no Lennon McCartney. It's like some of this stuff, like What's So Good About Goodbye, or I'll Try Something New.
Did you see the Tammy show?
Oh, my. Tammy, I mean, I was thinking about the Stones today. I mean, one of the greatest moments is James Brown doing his thing. Mick Jagger, then they show him. They do a close-up of Jagger taking notes. And then you see Jagger trying to do James Brown seconds later. It's like, oh my God, we're seeing the great just appropriation of African American music by sort of by we're seeing it before our eyes watching.
When did you take music into your own hands?
Oh, I mean, when I was like 9 or 10, took one of my little brothers and said, here's a Quaker Oats box. You beat on that. That'll be drums. You know, I mean, always just, I'm coming of age and becoming aware. It's like, okay, I'm 7 and in second grade when, Kennedy gets assassinated, which is, if you weren't there, you'll never know. I was in a Catholic school on the Hill, Marymount Grade School. It ain't there anymore. And you've got this period for, like, you know, it's like Thanksgiving and then Christmas. And, like, all the big kids are just going around bursting into tears at weird times for no reason. It's just this black time of mourning for everybody. And it's just like, you realize nobody's ever going to be happy. No kid is ever going to be happy ever again. And then, like, all of a sudden there's, hey, have you heard about, you know, and boom, suddenly the Beatles hit. And it's like, 1963 is forgotten, suddenly. It's like, this is something from England that's never happened, that they're new, they're totally different, and it subconsciously, a whole coming generation was allowed a second chance, and allowed a kind of amnesia, if you will. What the Beatles did in healing is almost more important than anything else that happened, but... So I'm like 7 when Beatlemania hits, and I mean, they're still my favorite group now.
And did you want a guitar right then?
Yeah, didn't get one for years. Thanks.
Your brother on the fucking oatmeal box.
I'd do what I could, yep. We would play...
let's hear some new laughs right now.
Oh, yeah.
Did I ever mention I need you? And I think you need the same thing too. But since I can't be there for you that way, I really don't know what to say.
Thank you. Burn all my books, my page, cut my flesh with a paper knife. eyes of the world awaken. Break your chains, demand your rights. All the wealth you make is taken by exploiting parasites.
Tumbling down. Oh,
Yardbirds on an oatmeal box.
Live from Pedro Show. We just heard Difference by The Last. Ahead of that was John, Tom, and Joe, Howie Reeve. Drifting. Something new from Dirty Beaches before that. Brand new live thing from Pop Group. Track. And started with More of The Last from this new album, Danger. I don't know what to say. So, you didn't know what to say. You didn't know what to get. How to ask for a guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Well, for your love. What? Just with,
oh, yeah, of, yeah. We were, I think we changed the words, but yeah, we were trying to do like, you know. Well, For Your Love is such a great song, which is, I'm a kid. I'm like, you know, this is, I'm going between 7 and 10 during this little period called the mid-60s. So we're being bombarded with more great songs than have any right to have existed in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
So it's like, everybody wanted to be in a rock band then, and I just never stopped wanting it.
When did the guitar come?
The guitar didn't come until I just turned 11.
11.
Yeah, and somebody, either a friend suggested me, or more likely, I think music studios used to like cold call, you know, parents and say, your child has been recommended as someone who might like to be learning a musical instrument. You know, one of those scams.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah.
So, and my mom said, did you want to learn how to play anything? Well, now that you ask.
I want guitar.
So
was it acoustic?
Yeah, a little old, acoustic nylon string guitar. And, you know, played.
What'd you do, Fred, first? Copy records?
Well, at the very beginning we were doing, you know, I had to take the lessons, which were, you know, about as exciting as you can imagine. The lady, Dorothy's School of Music, in Lomita on PCH. I think it's right next to where the Tiki Bar is now down there. But, I got passed off from Dorothy to, a high school kid to take over giving me the lessons. So we made a deal. If, I would get through the lessons in, you know, half of the session, then he'd show me like Beatles songs for the other half. Okay, yeah.
Songs you wanted to learn.
Right, and so we did lessons for a little bit, but finally I got a hold of a chord book, which is what I want, so I just started looking, figuring them out.
Self-taught.
That worked out well. I needed to know, you know, where to put the fingers and stuff, but as far as really trying to get something to sound like it did on the record,
yeah.
As you say, I started listening to records found out that was a lot more satisfying. Plus, that's the only way to learn how to write.
Okay.
Like, really, you know, you try to figure out what they're doing in the process. You're training your mind to.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Yeah, I just got in the guitar, so I didn't have, I didn't know any chords.
Yeah.
So I just started going blam, blam. So I had to figure out something that I could just strum and not do anything with the other hand.
Rumble?
Yeah, so I wrote, I think it was a song of lament. Baby, I repent. Nothing really to write home about, but I was 11. But I could do that.
Lament for 11-year-old is pretty intense. Mm-hmm. I'm rather mad.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I had to lament about at that age.
Some of the blood of the bard rolling through your fucking venules. You know, Shakespeare by the Sea is coming up here.
Oh, that's right. What are they doing this
one? A couple weeks. It's going to be Hamlet and Midsummer Night Eve.
Damn, the two classics.
They've had that a few times.
Yeah.
Midsummer.
Yeah, Midsummer seems like a
happy
no brainer. What I can't remember the last one I saw.
The palate cleanser. So when did you start your first band?
We Are Such Stuff As. How long did it take? Within a year of taking up the guitar.
So like 12.
As soon as I could.
What
so
did
right
you call
about.
It?
What the heck? To see if I remember what we called it, I'm not sure I'm going to admit it. You know,
12-year-old.
It couldn't have been anything good. Yeah, and this is I'm 12. So this is by this time every garage band. You know, it used to be every garage band has to learn Wipeout,
yeah.
Dennis Louie. By the time I make the garages at 68, so everybody's got to learn Sunshine of Your Love.
Oh yeah,
You got to know that one. Although after the Batman show came out, Wipeout made a comeback. It actually made a comeback on the damn charts just because it sounded so similar to the Batman thing.
Wow.
We're never getting out of this decade. Yeah. Oh, Carol Kay, man.
She's
I remember
the face
she was.
Basically, come Batman.
And everything else.
a lot of television music. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Hal Blaine. My brother David knows her. Yeah. Oh, of course, the great Hal Blaine and Carol Kay. But yeah, Carol actually told David it was, you know, when they did when the Wondermints went to do the Brian Wilson thing.
Yeah.
The one Wondermint that didn't get to go along was my brother David.
Yeah. Right.
And who, of course, also co-founded the Descendants. Poor guy. Missed the boat and everything, but they already had a contract for a different bass player, so they couldn't use David. And Carol Kay said, you ought to be up there. Which is pretty cool.
She looks to have her say that.
Does she really?
Yeah, she gives lessons.
Nice.
She's got to be the right kind of bass player. So when do you start the last?
Okay, so we got... Yeah, I go through various garage sort of bands, and I mean, I've written, there's stuff that's ended up on record, I was starting to write, like, by the time I'm, like, by 70, 71, like, when I'm 14, 15.
Yeah.
And I think 1972, I'm just 16, that's when I meet Vitus. We're at Loyola High.
Yeah.
He's been in Germany for a few years. He's transferred all over. I was trying to get something together, and I found out he played flute. And I liked Toll. I said, okay, I got to get this guy. Got to get him into a band. It'll, you know, that'll be our gimmick. We'll have a flute. So we started this progressive band. We were in a French class. And so on the French book, we made a bet, $5, as to whose band was going to make it first. So we each had a different band, you know. But so we ended up hedging our bets by merging bands.
And they were prog bands?
Yeah, yeah. And it became, when it merged.
So you moved from garage music to prog.
Yeah.
Which is what the Times was doing, I remember, early 70s. Yeah.
And the garage stuff wasn't, you know, I mean, it wasn't garage in the good sense, really. You know, it was...
Trashman wasn't trash.
Yeah, it was... I mean, everybody, you know, everybody was trying to be hip and play whatever they heard on FM, which at the time was good.
That was new.
But,
let's hear some more last.
Reality is grossly overrated. They say take what you want and you'll be sated. I found out they were wrong, it was belated. Now I can't tell you why I'm so elated, but I can see the faces of
off the Pedro Show. Started off with Faces in Your Eyes by The Last, and Circle by Sandra Vu, Six by Aaron Oppenheim. After that, Bronze Hogan by Tobacco. Tom out there on tour. Summer God Complex by The Lemon Limes, and finally Red Hair by The Last. So,
can you play Red Hair out here? There's like bad words in that song.
Yeah.
Nice. Thanks.
Like motherfuckers. Don't worry, Jim.
You just proved the point.
Competing prog bands unite to make one prog band.
I got to say, it's nice that we dovetailed into that. I'm talking about prog band, and you just finished hearing Faces in Your Eyes, which has like sort of a da 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 da.
Yeah.
Carl, our bass player on that, figured out the perfect mnemonic. He said, simple, kill me now, I want to die, kill me now, I want to die. Over and over. That's how you repeat that. That's how you get through the song. But anyway, yeah, the whole idea.
Taco burrito.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
That's how I learned that. Taco burrito.
That's hilarious. But yeah, so the idea of the prog stuff, and we're not talking about, obviously, music to fall into a coma by, like the later krautrock stuff, as fun as some of them could occasionally be. But it, here's the thing for me. It's like, to get to The Last, I have to tell this little story. It's I was ready for Woodstock. I was almost old enough to go to Woodstock, almost old enough to go to Altamont. Could have gone to both, had rides, would have had to run away. Just a little bit too young, but just, I couldn't wait to be old enough to like peace out with my brothers and sisters, because I knew we were all going to be one big communal happy family all through the 70s, right? I thought, yeah, I want to go to all the great festivals. I'm sure Hendrix will be playing for decades, and Janis, and stuff. And, the whole Woodstock myth, the whole idea, and for me, just the musical aspect of it. I couldn't wait to be old enough to get in there, and it's like, the early 70s hit, I'm a teenager, and where did everybody go? You know, it's like after Kent State and Jackson State, the forgotten one, you know, it's like, oh, wow, they're shooting real bullets. Well, I think I'll go back to school. I don't think I need to be in counterculture anymore, you know. As soon as the draft winds down, as soon as there is, like, real danger, it's like the bloody movement just like dissipates, dies. There are a million and a half people, a million and a half chickens that just run off and leave us. Wait a minute, you guys sold us a bill of goods.
So it's time to break up the prog band.
It's like, well, actually, no, it's about what I started it. but no, the deal was that it just like, I watch every one of my favorite bands get bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Stones after Exile, no. Solo Beatles, sometime in New York City. No, there's no reason for it to exist. They're just like everybody. The Kinks got bad. Tool got bad. Zappa got bad. Zappa, instead of being the most brilliant guy in rock and roll, starts telling potty jokes and singing about yellow snow and starts making money. Everybody starts getting crappier and crappier and more successful. And it's just like, part of that's improved recording techniques that don't lend themselves well to the great accidental stuff that makes for great music. And a whole bunch of factors that books have probably been written about. But basically, rock music has gone downhill and nobody seems alarmed. I was like, oh, crap. So I figure, okay, we have to reinvent it or something or do something. And so my approach, not having any better ideas, we started doing the ultimate band that was going to, no song would stay in the same key signature, the same time. You know, we were going to, it's going to change. We would have songs that would go from a little country part into like a 7/8 jazz thing. And it just, whatever we could do to mess it up. And it was fun. Self-indulgent, of course, but we were teenagers. We were self-indulgent by definition. It was fun, it was different, and we used to play high school dances. I played a few, never the same one more than once, though. We'd go in triumphant and leave running out the back way, escaping with most of our equipment by the skin of our teeth. But yeah, we would mess, we, we would like mess up a lot of just like regular parties and rah rah, you know, dances. And
what's the name of this band?
We loved it because, of course, you know.
Did they have the name of this band?
Nostradamus, Morgoth, Ajar. Several names. We went through a lot of names, which is actually part of the, you know, if you can't use the same name because, okay, that one's got a bad rap, man. No. There's
at the
a lynching party.
First hour, May 28, 2014, special guest Joe Nulty. Brother Matt, let's hold tight for hour two.
I know.
May 28, 2014, it's the second hour of the Wacky Pedro Show.
Going out of my mouth. It's up there. It's down there. It's time and space. It's eternity in a shipwreck in the silent water. Daylight brings an hourglass of sand and foam, athwart an ocean wave. The moon has a lonely wound that can reach into your cave. It's up there. It's down there. It's a fortune teller's lip bursting with rapture. Walk in down the forever path to escape death, rat, rat. Walk. It's down there. It's time and space and life. There is no escape. Who will dance in its ballroom?
Show, start off the second hour with The Last doing Danger. Your brother Mike wrote that too.
Brother Mike wrote it.
Wow. He's the only one he wrote on.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Sorry.
He didn't have a lot of stuff ready and I was on a roll.
You heard this band, The Chronics, from Italy? Well, I played their version. They just came out with a version of She Don't Know Why I'm Here.
That's the ones. I had just been in contact with them. I was wondering if that was the same band. I haven't heard it yet. No. They told me I should hit you up for a copy.
Okay. Yeah. No problem. I mean, they do an interesting version.
That, I would love to hear that.
Okay.
Oh, dear. Well, that could be good.
No, it is. It is. It's really neat. It's. They did you right. They did the song
wow.
right. After that was Robots from Billions of Comrades, Sand and Bones from Cuz, new album from Cuz, Errors of Metabolism with On Muscle Pig Beach, The Suburbs with Memory. Do you remember The Suburbs?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
The soda band that came and played.
Yeah.
They were touring a Volkswagen bus. I think the only band I know that ever tried to tour a bus. After that
right,
was Blank, Up, Up. They were at Tokyo Band from... We're at Harold's place a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
And then finally, I'm Not Crazy by The Last. That ain't a Mike song, right?
That I wrote it.
Yeah. It's
but he does it justice with the no. And actually, yeah, I'm Not Crazy as far as
so
that's debatable.
So when did Borgoff finally lose all its names and become The Last?
Oh, okay. So here's how it goes down. It's like I had a you know, an epiphanal moment. This is right. This has to be probably either late 72, I think very early 73. Okay, so we're in the dreaded depths of the early mid 70s void, if you will. And I've got
greater.
Yeah. And we've got, so, and I've got my, you know, the Morgoth, the band thing going on. And I had an epiphanal moment. Where, you may ask? I'm living in Hermosa, going to school downtown L.A. Where did I have this epiphanal moment? Just off Western on Avenida de Aprenda.
Yeah.
So.
That's by Dotson.
That's right. That is by Dotson.
Right,
I have walked
learning,
from Dotson.
The Learning Avenue.
Yeah.
The Navy housing's right by there.
The Navy housing is... right across the
That's
street.
Where I came to California from Virginia.
Amazing. So yeah. So for some, I have a home away from home in high school, in Pedro, on that street, in that area at the time, and it was a school day. It was after school. We were hanging out. Somebody had one of those old, KRLA Happening Hits albums or something, whatever, and. For a joke, and they were playing songs, and I was in a very, I had to be careful. Family members will be listening. I was in a very susceptible state of mind.
Yeah.
And somebody put on "Push and Do Hard" by the King, by the Seeds. Forgive me. We used to do "Push and Do Hard" with "You Really Got Me" as a medley. So, anyway, I hadn't heard. I heard it millions of times back in the day. Hadn't heard it in a little while, a few years, and it was just like, this is a lot better than I remember it being. It just, it took on extra meaning, extra depth. Then it gets to the guitar solo, which is so clumsily played, so simple, but so beautifully pentatonic. It sounds like an Irish dirge. I realized, my God, it's like, you know, you talk about art as being as the taking away of that which is non-essential. Like Michelangelo saying, the statue's already there, I just have to get rid of the stuff covering it.
Yeah.
You know, as this idea of sculpting. And just like, it was just like, these few dumb little notes were all perfect and said everything and said more than anything I was hearing on the damn radio.
Yeah.
What am I doing? This stuff is better than what's out there now. This is the beginning of 73. So by spring 73, Pushing New Horizons in the set, we started the road to punk rock.
Okay.
Even while, like, and this is why, while Raw Power is coming out. So it's,
still
the continuum.
Azerbaijan or
there,
Goth.
There's
when does the last
name? Nostradamus too. Nostradamus. And then somebody decided that we'd become Twice. Hated the name. And we kept
Twice?
T-O with a Y. T-W-Y-C-E.
Yeah.
That's the first time we had any dealings with a manager. See where that gets you? Somebody wants to manage you, tell them, just say no. The high school band lasted through high school.
Yeah.
Mostly reviled. We came back together in 75.
Yeah.
I was able to get them together to do one party in Hawthorne in summer. And we knew that was pretty much going to be it. And we did it. And by this time I got the band together and I was getting kind of into it. I said, let's have some fun. So we started doing like old scenes, and old Kinks. We did the original Guess Who version of Shaken All Over, stuff like that. Just like I was like getting heavily into, you know, like mid-60s. It's like a song doesn't need to be over 2.5 minutes. It doesn't need to be complex. As far as virtuosity, that doesn't need to really exist. You know, it's like feeling over, you know, over ability.
So that was going to be the last gig?
And that was good, the last gig of that of that prog band. We knew that was probably going to be it. But I said, I made him learn a bunch of new songs. Just to go out, just to have
the
fun.
Last gig. But does the name have something to do with that?
Not at all.
Okay.
So, but we did that thing, and it's just like, all of a sudden, all these, like, kids, all these, like, you know, we're just out of high school. All these kids are just getting into high school are just, like, going nuts. They thought it was the best thing they'd heard. You know, they thought we wrote the songs. I'm pretty sure we had my generation. I mean, but so I was getting into it. But that was it. I just stayed home buying records, playing records, and I was just like, I was just 50s records, 60s records. I was ignoring. There wasn't anything to listen to in the modern world anyway, but I was just ignoring most of that stuff. And didn't know what I was going to do, knew I was going to have to do something. Boom, end of 70. And I pretty much decided whatever was going to happen was going to have something to do with, I really felt music needed to go backward, to go forward. We had to get back out of the, you know, 30-minute jam sessions and back into, you know, the 2.5-minute pop, you know, hit them hard, hit them fast, leave them wanting more sort of ethos. And little did I realize, little did I ever expect that a scene, you know, built upon that whatever was already starting in New York. And so when by the end of 75, I start reading about a punk scene in New York City, I'm like, no. I mean, on one hand, whoa, this is great. On the other hand, wait, that was my idea. So there's obviously a zeitgeist going on because other people are having the same idea. I thought I was so alone and original. And
you're
so
you're part of this reaction.
Clearly.
It was in minority, obviously. The arena shows are huge. But there was a minority that's like, no.
Yeah. And it's just funny.
For a new crop.
And it's just so funny that the reaction was, you know, that somebody was wanting to go in that same different direction.
Sure. So where did the idea of the last?
Well, I started.
Vitas is a guy who comes over from the prog band to be in the last.
First one is Dave Harbison, the bass player, okay. Who is the bass player on the original single, and who unfortunately killed himself in '81. He must have, yes. We had, and actually our previous bass player of the prog band had killed himself a week before the record, the Shiona White record came out, so.
Wow.
Yeah, don't be a bass player in the last, it doesn't pay.
Your wife's the bass player.
Ah, shit. I haven't told her about that. Don't tell her, man.
So, okay, first the bass man.
Yeah, so basically what happened, it took me... It took a long time to get Vitas into it, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, because he thought I'd lost my mind.
Yeah.
Because I'm playing him the Ramones, and he's
I remember those days. People didn't want to know about punk.
Dude, I took...
You either knew it, liked it, or you didn't. Some people slowly got into it, but a lot of people, their first taste was like, what the fuck is wrong?
I had all these friends who were like into the Dead and Fleetwood Mac, but they like, I was the guy who knew music. They looked to me... What should we be listening to, Joe? I took like 20 of them to the Roxy to see that first Ramones Flavin' Groovy show in 76. Yeah. None of them ever spoke to me again. They're just like, woo-wee! Joe's got out the deep end. Except for one. One of those friends was Dave Harbison, our bass player.
And
he was willing to follow me. He thought I was nuts too, but he was into it.
His bass is great on that fucking record.
Oh, yeah. I've got some early recordings.
Wow.
That we also did in 76. But I got David in. We went through a couple of drummers. Vitas did not want to play music and didn't really want to be involved with anything punk, but was willing to help record us. And I worked with him. I said, you know, we could use flute on this song, or maybe you could do a little keyboards here.
The flute angle.
Yeah, but it wasn't until like mid-77 that he finally agreed to officially join the band. But... We were recording as of late 76. He played with us at our one 1976 show. November 76, our first show. It's a private party.
Yeah.
The Sweet 16 birthday party.
I saw that at your website.
Buster Keaton's granddaughter, Debbie Keaton.
Debbie Keaton.
Amazing.
Because I think I saw your third gig. Because what you got listed there is the whiskey in, was it January 78?
Yeah, that would have been like the third gig. Second gig, of course, was the Mask.
The Nerves. Me and Deep Boone saw you guys with the Nerves.
Nice.
And the whiskey. And
that was David Nolte's first gig. So we got Dave Harbison was still with us for the Mask show, which was like, I think, a week or two weeks before
it was
that.
Your brother, because you fucking tuned it on stage. And I've never seen something like that. You know, I've been to arena rock shows. I've never seen some guy tune the other dude's. Fucking thing. That was the first time I ever saw that.
Yeah, no, and it's funny too because I've seen it happen. It came naturally to us. One thing, I was determined from the beginning we weren't going to like dress up. We weren't going to wear Halloween costumes to go on stage. It's like.
You had a trippy coat though.
Yeah.
It was like red and.
That's true.
Blue and red.
Yeah.
You also painted on your guitar. The last.
Yeah. Vitas painted that, I think, actually.
Did he paint that?
I think he painted that, yeah.
Really big. The last. Like, you never saw that, you know, in those days. Right? Yeah. Guitars looked like pieces of furniture and shit. To make something so personal, it really struck us. We painted our guitars when we saw that.
Oh, no way. That's cool. That's cool.
I painted Pedro on mine, and people thought my name was Pedro. You know, we're getting to that
That's
point.
That's hilarious.
We're getting to that point with the show where Brother Matt brings on his spin cycle. So we're going to listen to him throw a schmaz here. Hey, cool. Okay, Brother Matt. Go. And not to mention that they know my face. And now it's hell getting out of the place. Come on! Walk in the street! Baby, I hope you have it for me.
have made you laugh, cause you know I'm a gentleman. Heaven found me living, didn't find me dead. Got a permanent ash mark on my forehead. Still couldn't save me from lying in bed. Staring at them clothes in the closet while I was out of my head. So I'm walking the streets tonight. I'm catching some fireflies. No more stay that I'm living a lie. No more today. No more tonight. You can say that I'm running the gun. A million miles away from the sun. Hesitating much too long. I still have a thought, baby. I hope you have a thought. Come on.
Now is the time for you to get right and repent.
You gotta ask yourself this, Christian. Can a man who has fought in the jungles with ivy and linen against the running drought kept the least of pigs sleeping in a hut so lowly that the rats was hunchback be my redeemer? And you gotta say, well, maybe this and maybe no. But I know that I gotta go somewhere, and that somewhere might well be church.
All the days you've been tired and tempted, all the nights you've been out in the cold, every phone line conversation's intercepted, and you can't reconnect, cause the frequency is closed. Many miles you've been out of direction, so many signs that you ain't got nowhere to go. The cataract has got its headlights disconnected, you're rolling your wheels down the wrong side of the road. Can you see them now? See them now. Can you see the sisters swinging? Yeah. Can you hear them now? Can you hear them now? Can you hear the brothers singing? Yeah. Let's go back to church. Let's go back to church. So damn long since you sang a song. Let's go back to church. Let's go back to church. Let's go back to church. Anything now, anywhere, anyhow. Let's go back to church. I
ain't going away, no way. Church is where I'm going to stay every time. I come to church, I feel alone, alive, resuscitated. Ain't no fear, I chase all my blues away. Right here in church.
An aging young rebel called what's his name wanted to be different while he stayed the same, and he couldn't. He just couldn't, no matter what he would try. Told by his mother, an aging old thing, better go see Clever. You give Clever a ring, which he did. I called him up, just so Mommy wouldn't cry. Clever heard his story about different and the same. Said, you crazy? This is some silly game. No, no, it ain't. Like Mommy said, you gotta straighten out my head. Clever, you're so clever. Is your cleverness enough? Can you help this aging rebel? Do you really have the stuff? Bet you don't have. Bet your bread that you'll pass the buck instead. Clever sent our hero to a crowded, funny room where a crowd of cunnings listen, giggle in the gloom. That your problem, aging rebel? Don't you really know the score? What's this rebel's name? You crazy? You think you're gonna change this silly world? Better see yourself a shrink. Cunningly they argue about our boy, who's breaking down the door. Now he's running down a dark. Diabolical awaits. Grabs him by the ankle. Ain't it just like fate? Let go! Oh no, would you? Diabolical inside. Diabolical laughs in an alley full of soot. Never let you go. You're gonna lose your little foot. Forget the same. You'll be different now. Somewhat shorter on one side. Panic in his brain pulls and gets away. Loses him a foot.
That's about it. Spin cycle for this.
Ken Nordine.
Oh, yeah.
Brother Ken. Brother Mel, what were you thinking of? What was inspiring you? What was driving? What was the fourth? Force giving you the impetus.
Started with a little bit of roots there,
yep.
From some leftover Joshua Tree inklings from
revivalists.
Yeah, revivalists.
Was Little Dragon there?
I don't recall Little Dragon.
You know about the Swedish band?
No.
Somebody told me they were playing. Oh no, Bottle Lightning.
Oh, Lightning in a Bottle.
Lightning.
Yeah, that was this past weekend up in. They moved. Used to be in Irvine. Now
and you didn't go to that?
No, yeah, I skipped this year.
Oh, okay.
Getting pretty expensive.
Well, thank you so much for your spin cycle.
My pleasure.
Always aiding and abetting, bitching, slice of mine, fucking free for all. Back to our guest, Joe Nulty. So, you play this birthday party for Buster Keaton's granddaughter.
Yeah.
And that's your first last gig.
That was our first gig at the last.
How did you get the name The Last, though?
We had a prototype name called The Power. Which, yeah, it was my brother Mike, who was not in the band. From Twice of the Y to The Power, so baby steps towards getting anywhere good. We knew we needed a different name.
Yeah.
We just had our first practice, and it's me, bass player Dave Harbison. We had a drummer named Mike Clark, no relation to the Birds guy. We had a keyboardist named Sean Doherty was it Sean Doherty? Anyway, it was this one and only time. Vetus was there to record us. Little did he know, I wouldn't let him get away. And anyway, it was at my mom's garage on 517 2nd Street in Hermosa.
Yeah.
And I'd moved there because it's like, you got to realize this, there was this thing happening in New York. What New York had that L.A. did not have was a place to play.
Yeah.
And nobody, it's never been as bad as it was since, and it probably never will be, and nobody will believe it. You will know. In the early and mid 70s, you know, if you were starting a band, an original band, you had nowhere to play.
Yes, right.
There was nowhere to play.
Nothing.
Maybe you could do a high school
or
a party.
Or somebody's backyard.
Right, but there was no club scene.
Yeah.
For a place that had, prior to the crackdown, such a vibrant mid-60s club scene,
sure.
L.A., there was no place to play. You could not get in. And it was a whole, like, Kafkaesque catch-22, only you could have opened this door sort of logic behind the way labels worked. In order for anybody to consider signing you, you had to have some, you know, you had to have records or something. You had to have been signed to be signed. If you are not signed, you cannot get signed.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever. So it's like, doors closed, suckers. We'll wait till everybody dies off, then we'll start looking around. But it was the labels. Back then there were labels. it was a closed system, man. They weren't letting nobody in. So
you play your birthday party, but then the second gig is actually the mask.
Right.
Situation in town. The new sheriff in town, Mr. Brandon.
That's right, because there's...
on Cherokee and Hollywood Boulevard.
Yep. 77, the things start to open up, but in 76 when we do the party, there is nothing. And there are maybe one or two times a year where a few lucky ones that ran into Kim Valley at a party are able to play the whiskey or something.
Yeah.
But then until Brendan in August of 77 opens the doors of the mask, there's nothing. There was 2 months earlier, briefly for about a month and a half, the Zippers and Backdoor Man had gotten a hold of this place called Under the Pier.
Yeah, Backdoor Man was a magazine. People write. Actually, there were some gigs at the Starwood. Because that's what Backdoor Man used to write about. Like Ronnie doing New Order. And
Yeah. There were few and far between things going on. There was the Radio Free Hollywood thing.
Yeah.
The Imperial Dogs, then the
right,
Dogs.
Don Waller.
Yeah, but Don Waller and Fast Freddy and Dee Dee Faye, Tom Gardner
that's
and the
all
rest
back
of them.
For-
yeah, that's what got me back to the South Bay. Because actually, my dad and I agreed... that we should not be under the same roof. So like right after high school, I'm out the door.
Yeah.
So I end up in L.A., wherever I could stay or whatever for
Dee
a couple
Dee
of years.
Dee Dee was Carson.
Huh? Dee Dee's in Carson. Yeah, yeah.
So
they're all
Zippers was Carson, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It was like, yeah, the late Billy Willa and Bob Willingham, and the rest. Danny Elfay, of course,
right.
and the great Lou Camerata. And, I mean, Pat Smear loved the Zippers. It's like all these punk people, like, really dug them, even though the Zippers were totally, like,
kind
you know,
wave.
Like, kind of
yeah.
glam metal. I mean, they were great. They should have been bigger. But I was up in L.A. I was working at Platypus Records in Santa Monica
sure.
when I started hearing about the punk thing happening in New York. And, like, as soon as I heard about that, I knew that's what I wanted to do. Now I had a focus. I had somewhere to go. That's when I started getting the prototype together. I started writing my first punk songs in March and April of 76, not knowing what any of the bands sound like because there's no records.
Just
the Ramones haven't put
yeah.
out their records. So, I'm writing songs based on pictures. Yeah,
that's how it was for us, too.
Right.
Pictures had no idea. We thought it was going to be a lot of synthesizers because they looked like they were from space.
No shit.
Remember those pictures in fucking Pinks? And there was one of, what were they called? Zolar X. There
oh,
was
God.
A Hollywood band, right?
Yes, there was.
And I thought the punk rockers were going to sound like that stuff. I didn't know.
I know, there's no way.
And I remember hearing New Rose, and it really blew me away. I thought, man, this is like, you were saying, my generation.
Uh-huh. For me, it was, and New Rose, I didn't like New Rose that much. I like later other
guitar.
Songs like Stab Your Back, you know.
It's guitar music though.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be.
Oh right.
And then actually seeing some Hollywood gigs, the Screamers, and Nervous Gender. I mean, was some strange.
Seeing the Screamers, I think changes more. What an amazing group! But
yeah, beautiful.
But at the beginning,
really say they were 60s.
Yeah, but there were no, and a lot of people were my 60s damage. See, I'd been, you know, I'd already been into this thing, and
oh,
I'd already.
Joe, we're at the end of the second hour.
Oops, sorry.
Didn't mean to cut you off, but we got one more to go. It's May 28, 2014. This will have Peter show. Hold tight for hour 3.
Yeah, I know. I just
2014, it's the third hour of the Walk from Pegrove show.
Doing Look Again, and that's what we're doing. We're looking again back at the past. Then we had Yells at Eels from that's the name of the band. Sorry, Stephen Gonzalez, his father Dennis Gonzalez, and Dallas there with Tranquilidad Aborathodora. Sorry, number two. Then Miss Melvis with Sunshine Birds. And finally, the last, When That I Am Dead.
When That I Am Dead.
That is, that's kind of Shakespearean. When That I Am Dead.
I'd like, why did I, well, clearly, obviously, a deliberate, you know, deliberately archaic. I'm not sure. I don't know if I can explain the choice.
So, you're writing all these songs in 76. You start getting to play in 78. You do this mass show. You do the Show Me and D. Boone song, the whiskey. You do a few whiskey shows that first year, right?
Yeah. Actually, we got we did one in March with the Bags, May with the Weirdos, or maybe it was the other way around. Basically, we would get asked to open a lot. The only stipulation was we had, you know, somebody had Alonis amplifiers.
We had no apps.
Yeah, none at all. We were there, so we never had a consistent sound.
How did you do Prac?
We had to find studios that had a back line.
Okay. You were telling me about the recording issue. You don't know why I'm here, but you did the overdubs. The preamp burned. You only got one shot.
Yeah. Little did we know, but there wasn't the beauty of the pressure of knowing you only had one shot because we had no idea.
Right.
What happened? We had done the. We had a 4-track tape deck. We'd used 2 of the tracks to do the drums and the bass and stuff. So then we had this elaborate setup. We were going to record the other 2 tracks simultaneously with 2 mics, but we had. Everything was in the positioning, so we had the lead guitar amps, so over here, then over there is going to be the keyboards, and then, Brother Mike's going to be doing the tambourine, over here, he's going to have to jump here to get in on the singing, and so we've got it, everything's all, maybe this is going to work, so we've got it coordinated, set up, so we hit the thing to do a practice, we had everything going into this elaborate sort of wiring system, into this preamp, very old one, and so we decided to do a test run to make sure that it sounded okay, so we went through both songs, Bombing and then She Don't Know I'm Here, and we finished the practice run, and before we could check it out, we noticed that the preamp has, actually, there's a little flame coming from it. It's caught fire. There's a swimming pool handy where the preamp is promptly tossed into. And that was the end of that recording session. And so that was that. We ended up...
got the take.
Yeah, we got the take. There's a million things wrong with it. The vocals are a little flat in places. But, what are you going to do? We couldn't do it again. So don't have a single or have a single. So we put it out. We had to go to, Whittier to get it pressed. And we had to, handwrite the labels. So it's a good thing we only made 300 because I wrote every one of those damn labels, man. it was quite literally painful, but what are you going to do?
Well, you go to make another single. When's L Explosion? A year later?
Actually, we did it even more limited. There's Every Summer Day, which is also on the CD. All the singles got put on the CD of L Explosion album, even though you can't tell. It's an extra bonus when you open it up. Every Summer Day, actually, we only released 150 copies. We had to make it private because Bomp, we were already with Bomp now.
Yeah.
They were going to reissue, she don't know why, but after six months, we figured, well, how much longer is our career going to last? So we made a very limited and even more weird and echoey Every Summer Day. That was our second single. That was June of 78. And then... we're still kind of in limbo, and so November of 78, we make one final single, and that was an LA Explosion single.
Yeah.
And
on the other side.
Yeah. We actually put Hitler's Brother as the back of Every Summer Day, but the acetate got dropped, so there's like a all the way through it. So we put it on the back of LA Explosion, too, just to give Jack another chance.
Yes, because Jack's saying that one.
Yeah, and then so Bob... by this time, he's getting pissed. So Greg says, "Stop putting out singles." We said, "Let us make our album, then we'll stop." He's like, "Okay, fine."
So
L Explosion album was the next.
Which took a long time to do.
A lot of waiting. Yeah. And truthfully, probably, it was like mostly April, March, April of 79. Recorded at the dead of night. We had a good studio. That we could not afford, and they had a house engineer who wanted to be a producer. I think this is the only thing he ever produced. But we were able; he was able to get us in there. He was able to sneak us in there in the dead of night, literally. There is hardly any of LA Explosion that was recorded before midnight, and I'm doing day jobs at the time, so I was young. But, trying to stay awake on the ride home was a little...
Yeah, sure.
Driving home at 5 in the morning every night. But, so L Explosion was made near somnambulantly. And then suddenly people started showing up at our shows. Funny thing how that works.
Yeah.
But,
let's play some music.
everything's faded. The cows are coming home. Lost and shaded, no matter where you roam. And it's you, you can see it too. She knows just what to do. She knows just what to do. Lost in a coal mine, caught in a belt.
girls will go down on me. I mean adventure, just the kind that they promised you and me.
Take care of her and leave my heart just die. You know the world is full of sorrow.
just heard Take Care of Her by The Last and Gigi Allen and The Jabbers. Ahead of that, I Need Adventure. Chicano Batman, brand new stuff. Bill Bow, Bass Town. Start off with She Knows Just What to Do by The Last. So, about this L.A. explosion, the album finally comes out when?
August 15th,
1979. Okay. And people are coming to the gigs, you think, because of the album?
Yeah, we couldn't afford to pay him, so it must have been that. But so what it started, this had to have helped. I don't know for sure what K-Rock started playing the album. Keith Morris's girlfriend worked at K-Rock at the time. I suspect she helped. Like, she would, like, you know, tell you, play this, play this. But we actually, at a time just before K-Rock was a power to be reckoned with, just before, it's always the story of our life, or just a little earlier, a little late. It's,
yeah.
But they started playing mostly Every Summer Day and Slave Driver from the album. And Slave Driver, of course, is particularly fun because swearing on air, especially in those days, is just not done. There's a very audible, oh, shit, right in the middle of Slave Driver, which I'd heard on the radio, you know. I was always proud of my little contribution to naughtiness. But, L.A. Explosion's a kind of a tough thing for me to talk about. It didn't really turn out the way that I'd heard it. Because we were, you know, pretty, well, how do you describe the, I mean, we were, I think, at our best, as chaotic as bands are supposed to be. You know, I like, I'm always trying to go for the roar, I guess, the roar of rock is, you know, a nearly out of control sort of monster.
And that same sound on that record.
Our engineer didn't like distortion. So everything I wanted to do was thrown out the window. So in order to get the record done, you know, it's actually, in a sense, it's allegorical to the preamp catching on fire. You make do with what's there. Yeah, you can't do what you can't do. But what's interesting is that we got, as a result, it was clean enough for K-Rock to play. They weren't going to play the Germs in 79, except for Young Rodney. But what would happen, we'd get all these nice new wave kids would start going to our show. Let's go to the Starwood and see the surf band, The Last. And they'd go there, and, you know, we'd be like, I don't want to be alive! And people are slamming and this and that and stuff. And so the nice new wave kids are horrified, and you know, but they notice that people are having fun. And then a week later, the nice kids show up again, only they've got, you know, like spiky hair. Somebody's gotten a bicycle chain. It's like we were a halfway house for bringing indoctrinating so many nice kids into.
But, you know, talking about Hermosa kid, by this time you're pracking at the church.
Yeah.
So you know some guys that are also pracking at the church.
Yeah, and that's another that could be another show.
Flag.
Yeah, it's
Firm.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah. Right. Basically, the South Bay Connection. And it's like, that was my thing at the beginning.
They weren't Flag, they were Panic.
Panic, yes, of course. I said, they're changing their name to a Roach Spray? Is that wise?
it was actually Raymond's name. And it was about the anarchy.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's good old,
I think,
of course.
There was a Hollywood band called Panic, and they had to change because Greg Shaw was going to put out the Panic record.
Well, he was going to put out that EP. Yeah, yeah. And he was going to put that out about the same time he was going to do the Shiona Wiry issue. Actually, so inadvertently, and I want to say, actually, you know, Greg and I, actually, we almost got Look Again released finally. Greg and I were making plans for Last reissues, and we're on the best of terms when he died. Yeah. And actually, my email crashed within an hour of his death. I found out later. And my last thing I'd done in the email was I was trading emails with him for future projects. So it was
reissue. So
Greg Shaw on his way out of town crashed my email.
Wow. Way out of town. But you hook up with these guys.
Yeah,
you already mentioned earlier that your younger brother, Dave, was jamming with Billy.
Yeah, well, he started, but Descendants originally was, you know, Billy always talks about the Descendants started out just two guys smoking pot and in a bush. It's true, there was a bush. It was actually literally...
Burning bush.
Yeah, but my original idea had been when I saw the Backdoor Man was from the South Bay, I thought, oh my God, and they're writing about this new scene that's happening. Maybe, I thought, what a crazy thing. What if we could get a South Bay scene? Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
Then I forgot about that idea, but that got, I moved down to Hermosa Beach to my mom's place on 2nd Street specifically because of Backdoor Man, because of that, because I had that wild idea and I needed a staging area to start what would soon be the last. To answer that question, Mike, my brother Mike just came up with the name. We had a list of, like, we all kept just, like, writing down names, potential names, and Mike said, the last. I said, nah. Then about 15 minutes later, what was that again? So he named some Mike Nolte, who still exists in the band, yeah, and did name the band. So what happened was we find out there's another band, and we find in 78, I think, and that's Panic. Greg Ginn, I think he gets a hold of Brother David saying, yeah, you know, we want to try to, you know, do a record. How did you guys go about it and stuff? And that led to, you know, we set up a meeting of the bands. And at this point, The Itch, Dave and Frank Nevette have already started a band called The Itch. Frank comes up with the idea of changing the name to The Descendants. Yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be with the bad spelling and everything. Yeah. And the idea, like, you know, the last is like the start of things. Descendants come after, you know. And,
I remember that single, Rat Race, and,
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's the other side? Ride the Wild.
Ride the Wild. Yeah, Ride the Wild, yeah. We're, David...
That's a Frank song.
They'd already gotten Dave out of the band by then.
Right, right.
They recorded, they were at...
Because they were jamming in Long Beach, right? Because that's where Tony lived.
Yeah, yeah, but they recorded at that was Media Art, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's so they're weird. Recording at Media Art. I'm walking down Pier Avenue, beer in hand, and I just look over and I see, you know, I see them in there. David's, you know, doing the knobs. Like, you can see the door's open. I can see it from the street. So I walk in. It's just about the time for the solo on Ride the Wild. I thought, I should be louder. So I just reached over. So you know how loud that guitar is when it comes in? It's my fault. Just a drunken little boom, you know, punk rock. But I think it works. But anyway, yeah, so Dave and Frank were, I had already hooked up. We arranged to meet this band called Panic. While waiting, up rides Billy on a bicycle. And he says, yeah, he's going to be sitting in. Now, I swear, Robo was missing. Well, yeah. That's a different story. Bill doesn't like it. Huh? They had Migdal, but this is after Migdal, but Roberto had disappeared in downtown L.A., at least somebody said, you know, they were, like, considered they were going to maybe try Bill out to replace him. Bill swears that's not true. I will say nothing. All of our memories are fallible. But anyway, so there's Bill and Keith and Chuck and Greg and us. And what ensues, and of course Keith had brought enough beer for himself, which is one small liquor store worth. I too have brought some, so we have sufficient beverage. And so basically what ensues is this crazy drunken little jam wherein 15-year-old Billy Stevenson is making all these punk rockers play Rush.
Wow.
Great fun. Don't remember a thing about it, but we had a lot of fun. That was the beginning of the church scene. They soon changed their name to Black Flag. You probably want to stop for something, don't you?
No?
Oh, good. Greg soon gets a space at the church. Chuck gets another room, and it starts going like wildfire. Ron Reyes and I move in the day of Pollywog Park, which is, I think, June of 79.
With the Red Cross.
Ron.
Well, there's no Red Cross yet.
Yeah.
He becomes their drummer.
Because the tourists play Pollywog Park.
He's in the
and their drummer leaves soon after.
But I think Ron quit on stage in every band he was in.
Yeah, no. But, well, except for that last Flag Time, the Black Flag Time. I think he was.
He quit on stage.
Oh, somebody, he was thrown off stage this last time.
Oh yeah,
I'm talking about the new Black Flag. Yeah,
that's right. That's, he didn't get a chance to quit.
What? Yeah, I hate it when I can't take sides too.
Okay. Think about the Flag and Descendants. They tour. The last doesn't really get into touring.
And that's why we're the rich guys we are today. Yeah. I've got...
did do one tour.
Bill Stevens in 1980 is like, God, you guys got to get out. I don't think he's old enough to drive by that, but, you know, you guys got to get out and tour and stuff. We've always had...
Didn't you do one in the 90s?
Oh, yeah, but that's like a little bit too little too late. We never toured when we should have. There's always, oh, I'm in school, I can't do it. No, I can't leave my job, I can't. Yeah, there was always a reason why it was impossible for us to tour, which is what it is.
Nope.
We finally tour. We went to New York for a week in 88. We did a three-week disastrous cross-country tour in 89.
Okay, just before the 90s. You didn't have a tour in the 90s, huh? No? Okay.
No.
Okay, so it's the late 80s.
Yeah.
I know you did one or two. My memory is very fallible, too. We've been playing on the show here a lot of stuff from this album called Danger that came out a few months ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's the story about Danger? This goes to Bill Stevenson.
Yeah, the history in between. But Bill, well, we've always, to me, Bill was this very annoying kid that was always asking questions and, whatever, go away, kid, you bother me and stuff. To Bill, I was this, he, for some reason, liked my music a lot. Yeah. And he used to tell people, like, in the early days, someday I'm going to play in The Last. I found this out recently. But,
so, it was with Bill, to always do this.
Yeah, and of course, when I started hearing, as the Descendants progress, and when I start hearing stuff that Bill has done, oh, crap, he's good. Eventually, of course, a mutual admiration society develops, and, of course, Bill found a way to make music, pay to some extent, which... still is mind-boggling to me. But...
You went after Fort Collins.
Thank you. Let's cut to the chase. they were doing... Yeah, yeah. They were doing... I'm only in 2002. After numerous incarnations of the band, I thought, let's do something fun. I asked Bill if he and Carl could spare the time to, be the rhythm section.
Carl's the all bass player people.
Yeah.
I think he started out as the Massacre Guys with Stefan.
Yeah, Carl Stefan was played
Lake
together.
City, and then they became part of Billy and Milo's. Milo wasn't even in it. It was called Paul.
Right.
Different singers and stuff. And then. So Carl ends up on the bass, Billy on the drums. They bring you and Mike, your brother Mike, over to.
Yep, I've got a bunch of new songs that I'm pretty happy with that are also like semi punk rock for the first time in a while.
Yeah.
And so we.
The Blasting Room.
We do the album at the Blasting Room.
What was that like compared to Bell Explosion?
Completely different. It's totally in accordance.
Before Midnight.
Before Midnight, yeah. And Bill is kind of amazed because I do my best singing, early in the morning. I guess that's not normal. Bill said, nah, you're supposed to, your voice mellows during the day. Nah. But one thing Carl observed is that you've got two guys that have both been complete dictators of their own units for 30 years, and now they've got to work together.
Yeah.
So me and Bill may have been at loggerheads now and then.
But I thought it was mutual appreciation society.
Absolutely. So you've got a dichotomy going. Okay. Even while we're telling each other to go to hell, it's lovingly. But yeah, no, it was there were some funny stories. But yeah, it worked. Well, obviously, I think it worked. The proof's in. You know, if you like what you hear, then it worked. I think it worked. But obviously, it's not a group that's got a lot of time because, of course, Bill will be doing Flag at some point again. That's and, right. Of course, he's going to be doing Only Crime again. And, of course, these little bands like The Descendants and all are going to be doing a little something, too. Plus, he's doing his engineering stuff. But we've been able already to do at least three festivals, one in Florida, one in Texas, and then one I just got back from yesterday in Vegas, the Stern Brothers thing, Punk Rock Bowling. We got to sort of close out the whole thing. We played Monday night.
You got Raymond to do the cover.
Yes, we did. Yes,
the Baboom.
Yes. I saw the Baboom. I said, that's it. We got to use that. I just, you know. I remember all the Felix the Cat Punk, yeah. You know? but yeah, I got to go through. He had this room.
Did you ever see Panic when Raymond played the bass?
No.
Because you only saw with Gary, Chuck.
Yeah. Gary was the only. Right, Chuck, sorry. yeah. I only saw.
He still was doing that thing with Danky Worm and Danky.
Yeah, but I did. Actually, I met Ray before I met Greg. That was at, I think, some mask benefit or something. And I was at a urinal doing what one does. And a strange, tall, thin guy just rounded who I didn't know said, so when are the last going to do another gig?
Wow, yes.
Which was also.
And you got to search through his thing for the art?
Yeah, I got to search through all his stuff for something that was usable. It was,
and it was the bamboo.
Nice, yeah.
It just hit you.
Yeah, he had done the Marie Callas separately. Then he did Vavoom, and then for some reason he thought they worked. So he had taped that on there and just left it and didn't know what to do with it. And then,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, it's called Danger. There's only one song on there your brother Mike wrote, and it's called Danger.
Yep.
Is it the title song?
And he named the last. Go figure. Yeah. I should just quit. Let him do the whole. Actually, Mike's got some good new songs.
How much younger is he than you?
Not very. Well, let's see. He's June 59, 3 years.
He's only 3 years.
Yeah.
So he always seemed like a young guy.
David's younger than him.
Right. He's the guy that's on bass.
Yeah.
You said it was David's first gig, right?
Oh, at the Whiskey? Yeah, David had just turned 15, like a month or two before. Just turned 15, so not even aware he's 15. And Mom, could David join the band so he can go play the Whiskey? We have a gig, literally. He played chords on the bass.
Where is he right now? Is he in England?
No, right now he's in the Valley, is almost the same thing. Yeah, he does. He's a sound engineer for. TV stuff, not as glamorous, but unlike us, he makes money. But he still, once in a while, he'll play. Once in a while, I'll get him to do the occasional show. But yeah, so we've got, so sometimes Dave will play. I've got my local band, which has Greg Tarpley on drums, Lisa Torres on bass.
Right. Philo.
And Philo is also now with the Bill and Carl version. He'll be on the next record.
Oh, great. Oh, you mean you're planning another record? Bitchin'.
Yeah.
Bitchin'.
We have no idea how we're going to carve out the time, but we all want to do it.
Okay. We're at this point of the show. It'll get near the end, where I ask our guests, what kind of advice would you give a young person if they asked you about music? The racket, you know?
If you want to make money, don't do it. Run. No, I think, you know, if you have fun, don't listen to anybody, don't do anything for the money, you know, do stuff so that at the end, when you're like lying on your deathbed, you'll at least be happy with yourself. For somebody who wanted to do it, you gotta, I don't think you can want to do music. I think that you're compelled, I think you're forced, at least for me, it's like music makes me do what I do.
So you would tell somebody, do you really want to do,
exactly.
You really want to do music?
If you really want to do it, it's not going to let you not do it. But if you really want to do it, but you're kind of afraid to admit it, or, you know, don't worry about it, especially
don't
listen to your fears.
Don't get in the way of yourself.
Don't get in the way of yourself, yeah. There's also probably a million ways to do it. And there's not one right way.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good thing to pass on. I remember reading the liner notes to Danger that you wrote, and the big dilemma is who to dedicate the fucking record to.
Always is, yeah. Oh, and of course, I'm pretty sure I dedicated it to my daughter.
By the time you get to the end, you say, I know who.
Yep. She sings like an angel and will not sing if she knows someone's listening. I'm so proud. I think she's as shy as me, which is pretty damn shy. So I was petrified getting on stage, man, at the beginning. It's one nice thing about getting old. You look in the mirror, you say, God, I'm so pathetic looking, it just doesn't matter. I don't care. Makes it easy.
But younger, you do care.
Yeah, younger, yeah. When you got a fighting chance of not being hideous to look at, and you want to kind of try. But yeah, totally my daughter. Everything that I think I would have done differently as soon as...
Yeah, what if a young person asked you, if you could do one thing different, what would you have done?
I would have had a different answer before my daughter was born. But it's like everything... This whole maze of existence that the weird path I followed led to my daughter.
So everything had to happen.
So, yeah, having had this perfect child, I wouldn't change a thing. But
that makes sense.
Now, before she was born, I would change just about every damn thing. But there's probably a million and a half ways to do it wrong, too.
That's, what's that called? Behind sight.
Yeah, no kidding. But
no, I just ask you to hand on stuff because you know most people, they gotta do the mileage to learn the lessonage. So I thought maybe there's some little pearlage.
Yeah,
you might fucking share.
No, the one the beautiful thing about being where we are is that I could actually have conversations with people with fans. Like the best thing is somebody wants to know, they could talk to me and I'll give a personalized version.
That's what I heard about Jonathan Winters in Hollywood. If you found him in a supermarket, you got free 20 minutes.
Jonathan, that's hilarious.
He was very generous.
That's amazing.
You could get a command performance in the frozen food aisle.
That's nice.
And Joe, so kind of you come over to the Love Grotto here.
Nice to have you down.
Nice.
This is Brother Matt. And,
I'm delighted to do it.
Memories, a special story, The Last, and your journey through music. We're very, very, very grateful.
My pleasure. That was fun.
Okay. Thank you so much. Can't wait to hear this next album, a future gigs with both. Well, I haven't seen the Carl Billy one yet, but I have seen the local one, and I did. In fact, we got to share the stage.
That's right.
Less than a week after getting back from the last tour, and that was bitching. And for me to get to do... She Don't Know Why I'm Here With You was a dream of my life to finally do me and B. Boone see you do that 36 years ago.
Ooh,
thanks so much.
My pleasure.
It's been the May 28th edition, 2014 edition of the Walk from Pedro Show. Thank you so much, Joe.
Certainly.
Matt, thank you again for your always essential evening in bed.
Thank you for that burrito.
Earned it. Good people. Thank you much, and keep your powder dry. Yeah.